Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It is Thursday, June 14th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to get involved with legalization today. On the Audio Stash today, we've moved our interviews with Kevin Zeese and Doug McVeigh from Common Sense for Drug Policy into next week's Audio Stash so we can focus on two important breaking news stories today. New York State is moving very quickly to pass a medical marijuana bill there that would allow patient access to medical marijuana and patient cultivation in the state. The bill has been worked on by the Marijuana Policy Project. We reported yesterday that New York's governor and former state attorney general Elliot Spitzer made public comments this week supporting medical marijuana access. And many of you will have heard on radio and TV and mainstream news today that an FDA advisory panel rejected a Sanofi Aventis weight loss drug yesterday because of concerns over safety. What the mainstream news did not mention was that the Sanofi drug is a cannabinoid receptor blocker. That's to say the drug actively blocks those cannabinoid receptors in the brain and keeps endogenous cannabinoids from binding to them. The drug is called Rimonabant and would have been marketed in the U.S. under the trade name Zimulti. Rimonabant was claimed to help people lose almost 14 pounds a year. We cover the progress of the clinical trials on Rimonabant here on the Audio Stash with Paul Armentano and Dr. Robert Malamede. Dr. Malamede is an expert in the endocannabinoid system. Both Paul Armentano and Dr. Malamede expressed serious concerns last year over the cumulative effects of taking a drug that blocks such a fundamental biological system in the body, and it appears that the advisory panel at the FDA, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, who voted unanimously to table the drug, saw many of the same safety concerns. So we have a jam-packed audio stash today with breaking news coverage. We'll speak with Ray Warren from the Marijuana Policy Project and Gabriel Saya from the Drug Policy Alliance about New York and Connecticut's medical marijuana bills. And right now we're going to dive right into that weight loss drug story with Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. Paul Armentano joins us today to discuss the FDA review panel voting unanimously to keep the cannabinoid receptor blocker known as Rimonabant or Zimulti that Sanofi Aventis plan to market this year off of the U.S. market. Paul, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good to be here, Chris.
Great to speak with you today, Paul. We've discussed this drug before on the program. Tell us what the FDA panel decided yesterday.
Well, this was an expert advisory panel that was put together by the FDA to make recommendations to the agency regarding the safety of this particular drug, rimonabant, also known as Acomplia in Europe. And the panel 14-0 determined that, in fact, rimonabant did not possess a favorable risk-benefit profile. In other words, the panel felt unanimously that there were greater potential health dangers from this drug than there were potential benefits.
And this drug is already available in Europe, is that correct?
It was approved last year in Europe, and what is really interesting about this advisory panel decision is that in light of it, European regulators next week have announced that they are going to also revisit this issue, and they may perhaps consider recalling the drug, which at this point has been prescribed to about 100,000 people in Europe.
And it's used in Europe as a weight loss drug. You know, Paul, I've seen something that this same drug might be marketed as a nicotine smoking cessation agent as well.
Used as a weight loss drug. It was the makers of Acomplia initially, when they were bringing this product to market, wanted to bring it to market as a smoking cessation agent. And when they went before the FDA a couple of years ago with their data profile on it, the FDA actually at that time rejected approving this drug as a smoking cessation agent. They then put together some new trials, and they went to European regulators with their latest data, saying, okay, but look, people that take Acomplia happen to lose weight. European regulators gave preliminary approval last year to the drug. They then went back to the FDA here and tried to also get it marketed as a dietary aid. The FDA actually in July will make their final decision whether to approve or reject the drug for marketing in the United States, but it's fairly clear with this unanimous recommendation from this advisory panel, I would certainly be surprised if the FDA would not follow their recommendation and go along and reject the drug.
And Paul, is this the first time a drug is being marketed that attempts to manipulate that cannabinoid receptor system?
It's the first drug that I'm aware of that has been approved anywhere in the world for use by humans that actually blocks the natural binding of endocannabinoids. And like I said, it does have approval in Europe in a handful of countries. I believe in 18 countries a doctor can prescribe it as a weight loss drug. And like I said, that approval is actually going to be reconsidered next week in light of this very strong rejection by the FDA advisory panel.
Now, what were some of the things that the panel was most concerned about?
They seem to be most concerned about high incidence of adverse psychiatric reactions in people who took the drug. The drug is known in clinical trials to be associated with fairly high rates of depression among users, and what the panel spoke most publicly about and stated that their strongest concern was this risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior among individuals who used the drug. There were, in some clinical trials, alarmingly high numbers of patients who reported having suicidal thoughts after using Acomplia. They also talked about patients suffering from nausea and vomiting when they took the drug, and they also talked about, in general terms, patients experiencing adverse neurological symptoms after taking Acomplia. As you and I have talked before, there is at least one case study in the literature that finds a patient who used the drug showed symptoms of MS, and those symptoms went away after they stopped using the drug. While the panelists did not talk about MS specifically, they did, as I said, in general, talk about these adverse neurological symptoms. So there were a whole host of reasons why all 14 panelists were very concerned about the safety of this drug and rightly voted to, that it should not be approved for marketing in the U.S.
And do all of these clinical trials and the unfortunate side effects that some of these people have experienced here, does this tell us something about the cannabinoid receptor system in general?
Well, we know that the endocannabinoid system, and we're finding more and more each day, that this system is really integral to the health and actual human biology. you know, I can run down a laundry list of primary biological functions that this system is involved in regulating, whether it's mood or whether it's blood pressure or whether it is a learning ability or motor skills. All of these functions are in large part regulated by the endocannabinoid system. So to begin messing with this system, particularly, you know, in this case, so people might be able to lose a few vanity pounds, really seems to be a dangerous road to go. While we cannot look necessarily at animal trials and extrapolate those results to humans, I can tell you that in animals where they have blocked this receptor system from functioning as it normally would, there have been very, very dire results, including premature death. So, you know, certainly I would personally not want to be a guinea pig for this drug.
And Paul, is this the only drug that's in development right now that attempts to use the cannabinoid receptors in the body?
Well, rimonabant is known as a selective cannabinoid antagonist. What that means is there are a pair of cannabinoid receptors. They're known as CB1 receptors and CB2 receptors. In the case of rimonabant, it blocks the endogenous cannabinoids from binding to the CB1 receptor. The CB1 receptor is most prevalent in the central nervous system, and as a result, it's associated with some of the psychological effects from endogenous cannabinoids and exogenous cannabinoids like THC. There are plenty of companies out there that are trying to come up with what are known as agonists, which are THC-like drugs that bind to selective receptors. There's companies trying to come up with CB2-only binding agonists to try and develop a drug that could have the therapeutic aspects of marijuana but take away the high. There are other drugs like rimonabant that are simply trying to block the CB1 receptor. But ultimately, I think most people who study this issue are well aware that the most ideal cannabinoid are the natural ones occurring in cannabis that interact with both receptors and that have a synergistic approach rather than this sort of single bullet approach to try and manipulate a system that already exists naturally in humans and animals.
And is the development of these cannabinoid receptor manipulating drugs, you know, is this a response by Big Pharma to the fact that natural cannabis is illegal and that drugs can't be developed from natural cannabis?
No, I think it has everything to do with they're trying to eliminate any euphoria or high associated with marijuana. They want to take the effects on the body and the therapeutic effects of the drug and eliminate any psychological or euphoric effects. I mean, that's what's going on. If you read the literature, I mean, it's shocking to the degree with which investigators, when they publish their results showing generally safety and therapeutic efficacy, they will go out of their way to stress that an unwanted side effect of the drug is euphoria, and that until they can do something to address that, they don't feel that they can bring this drug to market. It really is shocking when you read the literature. There's one study that stands out in my mind that found certain cannabinoids, THC, CBD, and others, to significantly reduce the proliferation of breast cancer cells, yet the first half of the study basically focused on how it was unfortunate that there was this unwanted side effect of euphoria.
Well, Paul, this is certainly an interesting development this week, and I look forward to speaking with you again when the FDA does issue their final ruling.
I would like to stress that while it is expected the FDA will follow the recommendation of their advisory panel, by law they do not have to. They could choose, you know, despite this recommendation, to go ahead and approve rimonabant for U.S. approval. I certainly don't think they're going to do that, though.
Righto, Paul. Many thanks again for joining us here today to discuss this issue.
No problem, Chris.
Paul Armentano is Normal's Senior Policy Analyst. He's the author of the important booklet From Normal, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. You can read the entire publication online at Normal's website, and we have links directly to it at normalaudiostash.com. Let's begin our coverage of New York State's medical marijuana legislation here today. Members of New York State Assembly voted 92-52 on Assembly Bill 4867 yesterday. The legislation would authorize qualified patients to use medicinal cannabis under a doctor's supervision. Tomorrow, we'll record an interview with the sponsor of the New York bill, Assemblyman Richard Gottfried from Manhattan. Today, we'll speak with Ray Warren. Ray is the director of state policies for the Marijuana Policy Project, who've been pushing forward the legislation in New York. Ray, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good morning.
Many thanks for joining us here during a very busy week, Ray. First, you know, tell us about the legislation in New York and what it would allow as far as patient access.
Well, as passed by the House in New York, which is called the Assembly, the legislation allows patients to grow their own medicine and doesn't really provide any other form of distribution, but does allow properly certified patients to grow their own.
Ray, I know a lot of medical professionals have been in support of this bill in New York.
Well, the bill has been supported by doctors throughout New York State, including a number of medical organizations. We probably have medical support stronger in New York than in most states. All of the official state-level organizations have been supported.
And the sponsor of the bill, Richard Gottfried, who we'll interview with tomorrow, he's the chair of the Health Committee in the Assembly, so the bill has the support of one of the most important committees to weigh in on this.
Absolutely. The Assembly has been incredibly supportive. What's really exciting about New York, though, is in a lot of states, this has been a bipartisan effort, and the state Senate, which is controlled by the Republican Party, has also indicated they would be supportive. So Assemblyman Gottfried was fantastic. The debate was thrilling to watch, and we are very excited about the support in the Assembly, but we're also excited by the fact that we're going to have bipartisan support in the state Senate and send it on to the governor.
And in talking about that floor debate yesterday in the Assembly, what did you find to be some of the standout speeches yesterday?
Well, I think Assemblyman Gottfried did a great job of putting the human face on the bill. Whenever someone would bring up an objection, he would point out how important the bill was to, or is, to suffering cancer patients and suffering age patients. For example, I remember at one point an assembly person had indicated, this is an unconventional form of distribution or an unconventional form of taking medicine. And the Assemblyman Gottfried was just wonderful in pointing out that if you're dying of cancer, if you're suffering from the effects of chemotherapy, you're not really worried that much about what's conventional or not conventional. You're looking for relief. I think he answered the questions that were raised very well. He understood the issue and was a very good spokesman for us.
Ray, we've spoken with the National Association of People Living with AIDS here on the program, which is based there in New York City. You know, how important was that constituency and their appeal for compassionate access in getting this assembly vote?
I think the support from the AIDS and the AIDS caregiving community is incredibly important, not only in New York but in other states as well. Unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry has not been able to deal with some of the issues involving AIDS and treatment for AIDS, and marijuana is in fact the best and sometimes the only medicine that's effective for certain aspects of that condition and the treatment for that condition.
And let me ask, did Dr. Donald Abrams' data published in the journal Neurology this year that showed smoked cannabis being effective in treating HIV-associated neuropathy or chronic pain, did that come up when discussing the potential care for AIDS and HIV patients?
It has been mentioned, and it is important because, as Dr. Abrams pointed out, there are no pharmacological treatments, no approved pharmacological treatments that offer the same kind of relief as marijuana does for that painful neuropathy.
Ray, we saw New York's governor and former attorney general, Eliot Spitzer, issue strong statements in favor of medical marijuana this week. This was a complete 180 from his gubernatorial campaign statements. You know, what do you think came into play to change Governor Spitzer's view on the issue?
Well, as often happens in politics, what seems to be a very quick movement and a sudden movement in a state is not that sudden at all. We have been working with our allies, Normal and others in New York, and have been talking with the governor for months now, talking with the governor's aides. And fortunately, the governor was very open to talking and asked a lot of questions, and it was a slow process, but I think he was open-minded to the science and open-minded to to listening to New York doctors. Over 1,000 New York doctors have actually been supportive on this. So I think it was a long process that's been going on for some months, and I'm very excited that it's come to this fruition.
We've also seen the issue of medical marijuana access play into a broader topic of the privacy between a doctor and a patient, that relationship, and the ability for individuals and medical professionals to explore all options of treatment. Has that come into play in New York as well?
Well, I think it certainly comes to play, and again, especially among Republicans in the New York legislature, because there is a strong feeling that individuals, or as President Bush said in his State of the Union address, individuals should make medical decisions and not the government or insurers. So I think that particular argument plays very well with everyone, but is particularly salient to people who have a more individualistic, say, political orientation. Yes.
You mentioned the bipartisan support in New York. You know, Ray, we've seen medical marijuana be one of those very rare issues that politicians can, in a realistic way, put their politics, party politics, aside for the topic here.
Absolutely. The unfortunate thing about cancer and AIDS and multiple sclerosis, and speaking of MS, I cannot go without mentioning the great contribution that Montel Williams, who suffers from MS, has been in New York promoting the issue. But the unfortunate thing is these diseases do not know any party lines, and they affect all people. And the most important barometer on whether a legislator may change his or her mind and support this compassionate legislation is whether he or she knows somebody who suffers from one of the conditions. And we're very fortunate that Republicans as well as Democrats really seem to care about people who are suffering.
Ray, marijuana possession of less than 28 grams is decriminalized in New York State. Does that decriminalization also lend support for medical access, because there's no real compelling interest for a medical system to be abused in any way?
Well, I certainly think there's less fear, obviously, of that because of the decriminalization legislation. And I think the decriminalization legislation has shown that the world will not end if you don't have a bunch of draconian penalties against marijuana use. So it probably does help, but I think the compassionate aspect and the support from the medical community is what's really driving this success.
And have potential patients been involved with their legislators as well on this?
Oh, the patients in New York have been fabulous, and certainly their testimony has been important, but not only in formally in committee, but in contacting legislators. Patients have, for months now, been sending emails, making personal contacts, making personal phone calls. And again, it's that personal one-on-one contact from patients that seems to have the most effect.
Ray, we've seen medical marijuana before Vermont, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island this year. You know, has that also had some effect in moving New York's legislature to take some action on this, do you think?
I think certainly legislators from every state feel great comfort when they're not standing alone on a controversial issue. So the fact that Vermont strengthened its law this year, that Rhode Island made its law permanent, that Connecticut legislature passed a new medical marijuana law, this had to give great comfort to the legislators in New York, and I think it was important. And don't forget, we came within 9 votes of passing medical marijuana in New Hampshire, and I believe there'll be an initiative on the ballot next year for some marijuana reform in Massachusetts as well. So if we're successful, the entire Northeast Corridor from the Pennsylvania border north could be an area of reform within the next couple years.
Now, the legislative session in New York will break for the summer here in 2 weeks. Ray, do you think this could actually move through the Senate there in New York and go to the supportive Governor Spitzer's desk before then?
Well, we really, really, really need for activists and patients and people who care to contact their state senators immediately. There is hope. As I said, the Senate leadership has been supportive, but there's always a tendency at the end to ask questions, maybe to fiddle with the bill, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of time to make significant changes. So we hope the Senate will accept the Assembly bill or something very similar. It won't get bogged down in disagreements between the chambers, and it's really important that activists tell their senators we need this legislation right now.
Righto, Ray. We'll have links for our New York listeners to contact their legislators and urge them to support this legislation right up at normalaudiostash.com. Ray, thank you for joining us here today, and I look forward to speaking with you again as all of this moves forward.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris.
Ray Warren is the Director of State Policies for the Marijuana Policy Project, who have been pushing forward the legislation in New York. We have links to get involved and urge the legislators there to pass this medical marijuana bill at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us next today to weigh in on New York's medical marijuana legislation and that of New York's neighboring state of Connecticut is Gabriel Saya, the director of the State Policies and Organizing Project at the Drug Policy Alliance in New York. Gabriel, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you, Chris.
Wonderful to have you back on the program here, Gabriel. We're seeing very swift movement there in the New York legislature, but, you know, how long has New York had the chance to consider medical marijuana legislation?
Well, it's been about 10 years that the sponsor, Richard Gottfried, has been introducing this medical marijuana bill, and our allies over at the Marijuana Policy Project have actually been moving this issue forward in New York, and so it's really their effort that has gotten it this far. This is the first year that the bill has been voted out of the New York State Assembly, so I think it's a real sign of the considerable effort that they've put into this legislation. And, you know, now the hope is that it gets over to the Senate and that the Senate will vote on it.
Now, Gabriel, how do you feel about the legislation as it stands right now, how it might be practiced? The patients would be allowed to cultivate up to 12 plants and then also receive marijuana on the underground market, as long as there was no exchange for money or anything of value.
I think that would be, I mean, it's great. I think the more protections that are offered to patients and their caregivers, then the better off we are, and the more availability that they that is there for them to obtain marijuana in a safe manner and without the threat of arrest is certainly a step in the right direction. And I think that this has been, the timing couldn't be better insofar as the state right next door to us here in New York, Connecticut. They're also, as you know, considering medical marijuana legislation. It's passed the legislature there, and now we're waiting for the governor to sign it.
And Gabriel, you know, has Connecticut's governor indicated anything yet on her part in the bill there?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, she has expressed reservations within the media, and we did expect that last week on Wednesday that she was going to come out and publicly declare her intention to veto that bill. We were able to put that off and stay that announcement because we've had literally hundreds and hundreds of doctors and patients and other concerned citizens from throughout Connecticut, and as well as patients and doctors from across the country who have called and faxed and sent letters to the governor, you know, asking that she have some compassion, that she consider that this is a very narrow conservative bill, comparatively, the Connecticut medical marijuana legislation, and it's narrowly tailored. And it has all of the public safety provisions that a bill like this should have, and it even goes farther than other states in that regard. So we're hoping that she's hearing the call for compassion, and that she's going to, if not sign the bill, at least not veto it, at which point it would just pass into law.
And what were some of the governor's concerns there that she raised?
Well, she said that she was worried about the message that this would send to children. This is a fairly standard, you know, reply from you know, elected officials who are opposed to this issue. And, you know, we were able to get the information to her from the state of California and from the federal government's own data that Professor Mitch Earlywine from a university here in New York, as well as MPP, put together, that showed that in states that have effective medical marijuana laws, marijuana use amongst teenagers is actually leveled off or dropped, whereas in other states it's actually increased. So we were able to respond to that concern with research. You know, when she said that she thought it should only be tailored for terminally ill patients, we were able to get, you know, dozens and dozens of patient letters to the governor who said, look, you know, patients, many of whom, like Todd Ford as an example, who lives just south of Hartford, and he said, you know, my pain that I live with is so extraordinary that I'm a grown man and this makes me cry almost every day. And if, Governor, if you could feel the pain that I suffer through every day, you would have some compassion for me. Why would I need to be a terminal patient in order to experience some relief? And so, you know, that they stopped using that argument. And then we heard from the governor that they were waiting for the federal government to take action on this, and that she didn't want to do anything until the federal government took action. And, you know, the bill sponsor, a Republican by the name of Penny Bakayaki, a representative, she responded directly to the governor and said, you know, this is exactly why we need to pass this bill, because this issue has been so politicized within the federal government, they're clearly making political decisions, not scientific or compassionate ones, with regard to medical marijuana on the federal level. That's why states are taking the lead for taking the lead on this issue and moving forward to ensure that, you know, the most vulnerable people in our communities aren't subject to arrest and prosecution simply for seeking some relief.
We just spoke with Ray Warren from MPP, and he noted that from the Pennsylvania border north to Maine, if the bills pass in Connecticut, New York, that the whole northeast corridor here will have medical access. You know, having all of this access on the East Coast, you know, could that be something that could begin to affect this issue on the federal level in Washington?
I think it must. I think that as the tide continues to turn and as more and more states begin to consider medical marijuana legislation, that the federal government is going to have no choice but to be able, but to grapple with this issue. I don't see that happening under any circumstance with the Bush administration. They have made it absolutely clear that they want a almost dictatorial type of executive power that really weakens both the judicial branch and the legislative branch of government. And so I can't imagine that happening before 2009. But if we look across the country, you have states, you know, like Connecticut and New York that are poised to pass medical marijuana legislation. New Jersey is considering it this year. You have southern states like South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, all of whom are considering medical marijuana legislation. In the Midwest, you know, you have Minnesota, Wisconsin that are considering this legislation. In the West, obviously, in the Southwest with New Mexico. I mean, everywhere we are looking now, we see that the shift is happening. And I think it may very well be the case that by the end of, or by the beginning of 2009, when the next president takes office, that we have maybe 15 or 16 or even 17 states in the country that have medical marijuana laws, and potentially even over a third of the country's population living in those states, or certainly a quarter of the country's population living in states that have medical marijuana, effective medical marijuana laws. So the federal government is going to have to deal with this sooner than later.
Now, Gabriel, New York media has been all over this New York bill this week. But, you know, are you surprised that this movement in New York isn't getting more national media attention, and that, you know, medical marijuana bills overall this year, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Vermont, all of this hasn't been in the top news?
Yeah, we've been surprised by that as well, particularly given that we now have a presidential candidate in one of these races, Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, who is the first candidate, the only candidate for governor, for president right now, who has signed a medical marijuana law or bill into law. And that seems particularly interesting given that he had such a strong role in ensuring the passage of that bill in New Mexico. That alone, I hope, begins to come out more in the presidential debates. Because it should. I think it's worth noting, and I think it's an important entryway into the broader discussion of drug policy in this country. And, you know, we're suffocating for lack of that debate right now. And I think that the presidential candidates are, you know, they have a responsibility to address it. And I think the national news media also has a responsibility to address it, but it's just not shaken out that way. You know, one thing that is interesting this morning, I was, you know, doing a scan of articles on the internet and came across an article on one in India about the medical marijuana bills here in New York and Connecticut. And this article is on a medical website in India that is used across Asia for medical researchers and people that are interested in health policy. And so there is an international reporting that's going on about these bills right now, but unfortunately we're not getting much of a national attention, although the New York Times has had a couple of articles recently in the past few days.
And as activists, we need to be aware of contacting the media. They're regular people too. So often we're talking about contacting our elected officials about an issue, but contacting the media directly is also very important as well.
Absolutely. I think that if, you know, the listeners of your show contacted their local outlets and encouraged them to cover these stories that are taking place with regard to medical marijuana, at least the media would be forced to at least say no you know, the local media or national media. But certainly there's a lot of room for activism there and room to take action and encourage media outlets to cover this story.
Righto. Well, we'll have media contact links at normalaudiostash.com today. And Gabriel, thank you for taking time to speak with us about New York and Connecticut today.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate being back on the show.
Gabriel Saya is the director of the State Policies and Organizing Project at the Drug Policy Alliance. We have links to DPA at normalaudiostash.com. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.